In this episode, we speak with Florian Dotu, the co-founder and CEO of DataIQ, the platform for everyday AI, enabling data experts and domain experts to work together to build data into their daily operations, from advanced analytics to generative AI. Florian co-founded DataIQ in 2013. He envisioned a future for businesses with AI to become mainstream through the collaborative effort of everyone in the company, not just data scientists or technical experts. Today, more than 500 companies worldwide use DataIQ across industries, including life sciences, logistics, retail, manufacturing, energy, financial services, software, and technology. Florian began his technology career at Exeliad, a search engine startup, and has held multiple positions in product management, engineering, and data analytics in various fast-growing tech companies. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to follow.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of GrowthCap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Florian, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It's a delight to be with you.
My pleasure, RJ.
So this podcast, we focus on entrepreneurship. You've had an incredible journey with the amount of capital that you've brought in. It's several hundreds of millions. How are you different today than when you started the journey? You personally, how do you feel like you've evolved both professionally and just the way you are today? I mean, given you've gone on this tremendous journey.
I think you have been lucky first to be successful as an entrepreneur. I think that I've learned mostly how lucky I was, because when I look back at the journey of my company, DataIQ, indeed, it feels that we had the luck of being and operating at the kickstart of a revolution in data at the right time. I was lucky to find the right funders, the right first employees. I was operating at a period where raising capital was relatively easy, which is not the case always. In fact, I was lucky to find the first customers, among them quite a few. Most are actually still with us and we're very much confident in the success of the company. So all of this is, I would say, compounding luck. You know, luck on top of luck, which I think is how you start getting somewhere. So that's, I think, what I learned.
When you embarked on this company and its early days, AI wasn't as prevalent or attractive in the capital markets. So we'd be interested to hear your take on where it was then and how people are perceiving AI today.
When we started the company, it was not about AI yet, but it was quite a bit already about data. Back then, people were, in fact, talking about big data, using the term big data, not just data. And there was this perspective that companies were getting more and more data, that there was interesting value in data, and that future success was all about reap up the benefit of having more data. And that's, I think, how I started about this, and how I thought about what to do as a company. As in, if every company have to fight in terms of who would be first in this race for data, you have to make sure that every company has a fighting chance. Can you actually equalize the odds? Because potentially some companies, the most digital ones, the most prone to internal innovation, could have a head start in this race. So is there a way to actually help accessing the data, help making sense of the data, helps creating value out of the data in a modern way that can help even the odds, these odds in terms of being first at the data race? That's kind of like one of the main motivation for me when creating a company. I thought there was like a market there, because I think there is a market every time there is some asymmetry in the universe and that there is the ability to actually correct for it.
Mm-hmm. And was your background in data science, is that where you were coming from? And was it more academic or were you also working already for private companies?
When I started at IQ, I think I worked already for 13 years
mm-hmm.
in private company. So mm-hmm. was already quite old, as in like 30, oh my God, or 32, in fact, 33. And I had worked for about 10 years, in particular in text engine, text mining, search engine, meaning building this kind of like text models that are now so popular. And so I was a little bit already in it. But more particularly, at some point for 2 years before starting that IQ, I focused quite a bit on the field of data and analytics.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working with multiple companies trying to understand how to make value out of data because I was very interested in the topic itself. And so I wanted to understand from inside, how could you help organization way more?
Mm-hmm. And was it the idea of this leveling the playing field in this asymmetry? Was that what compelled you to start Data IQ, or was it this more of a desire to really have your own company in this field of big data?
I think both apply. I was pretty much motivated at the idea of having my own company, but actually my main motivation was to have an impact. And to some extent, sometimes the best way to have an impact is to be your own CEO.
Mm-hmm.
You can't always rely on like finding the right company to work for and so forth. And I was like, it's probably the right time for me to do so, especially from the place I started, which is Paris, France, which is a place full of croissants and bakeries and very, very smart people. But to some extent, let's say back then, if you wanted to join an entrepreneurship journey, well, it was actually a good idea to build your own,
mm-hmm.
just because the ecosystem was nascent. So I had the willingness to start my own company. And then indeed, when looking at what to do, what was the main trend that I was interested in, it was this idea of essentially democratization of data and data science and AI. How can you make it sure that more people could be using it and participate to that trend?
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, the uniqueness of the perspective you could have from where I was indeed that I think that when you operate from a very technological ecosystem or advanced ecosystem such as the Bay Area, you may sometimes not see how difficult technology can be because you operate like at the top of the technology ladder and you underappreciate the ability to create value by helping any kind of organization to derive value, potentially in a way that is less advanced compared to what a tech-first, digital-first company is typically doing. I very much did not want to have startups or tech companies as my first customers.
And I'm curious what it's like to start a company in Paris versus in other areas of the world where maybe there's a higher population of other tech founders. What's it like to start and scale a company out of Paris?
I think, yeah. You benefit from having probably a different perspective because you build your perspective, I hope, and I think more with forcing yourself to customer interaction and similar activities and less so by comparing yourself to peers because you've got fewer peers. Mm-hmm. Like literally, if you're in Paris, France, you should be the only one working on the topic you're interested in. Because if there is like even one other company doing kind of the same thing, it does mean there are at least 20 companies doing the same thing in the US. It's just a matter of math. If you've got two companies in France, probably 20 in the US, which is probably a very bad sign. So you need to look for something specific, focus on your customers, and you probably rely a little bit less on the tech, the trends, and so forth, and more on a specific domain or specific topic you want to get deep into. And I think as a rule of thumb, one thing which is great in Paris, France, but I think also in many areas of the world now, is that you've got an access to local engineering talent, which is very different because you can build your team quicker to some extent and also build it over time.
You mentioned, you know, you've been able to scale very quickly and you've mentioned that you've been able to retain some of those early customers. Do you think you have particular strengths in the customer interfacing part, coupled with the fact that you're so honed in on your product and products and solutions that you're kind of aligned with the way your customer needs are evolving?
So the platform we are building is a platform that, when I say building, well, we built it 10 years ago and I'm still staying building. Mm-hmm. I think the forever building endeavor. But we are building a platform to enable organizations and analysts and business users and data scientists to do more with data. And indeed, in order to build that platform, we added capabilities over time, having the perspective that data is a forever growing field and AI is a forever growing field. Like, you've got, oh, you clean the data and quality, and then you've got machine learning and predictive technologies and forecasts, like simple things. But you've got more sophisticated techniques. You have image recognition and text and so forth. And now you've got generative AI and LLMs. So it's a forever field. And we had this perspective that instead of like being the best and one very precise thing in the field of data, we could actually build a platform that was aggregating capabilities in order to help our customers and users along a full journey. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very peculiar perspective that enabled us to build this trust with them over time by being the company evolving with them, evolving with the technologies around them. We had customers that changed their database technology like 5 times, 6 times while using Dataiku. They were using, I don't know if you were in the data field back 10 years ago, but back then there was this open source project from Yahoo and others called Hadoop, which was very popular. And like everyone has like this elephant icon in mind. It was all about Hadoop back 10 years ago. So our customers were using that and we were working on top of that. But then you had other database technologies. People moved to the cloud. And now it's a lot about Snowflake and Databricks and other companies. And so it's all about how you build over time this ability for customers to be a trusted company that evolves with them. And I think that when you're selling in enterprise B2B, and having the largest companies of the world as customers, you have to have this mindset, which is like, it's not just customer first. Like, of course, it's customer first, but it's also being able to anticipate and being trust in terms of how you think about your roadmap, how you think about durability of whatever you built in order to match the expectation of enterprise customers. And to some extent, it's different, I think, compared to the perspective you can have when serving other segments of the market.
And was this a kind of conscious decision, or did it evolve in this manner that you would, in essence, try to continually solve your clients' problems versus saying, we're going to focus as a company on this particular solution set and only do that?
I think it was a conscious decision, which was probably we were contrarian, as in back then, some VCs were like, you should actually focus on one thing in order to be successful. And I was like, I don't think so, because data, it's a plumbering problem. It's not an I-class problem. Even AI, to some extent, from the perspective of enterprise, it's a plumbering problem. So you've got lots of technologies, and the actual cost is to connect those things together. So because of what we are, we won't be the one building a brand new algorithms or what else. And I actually don't believe that algorithms are that much differentiated over time in ML. It's like large language models. You have lots of them that are evolving over time. And at the end of the day, many open source developments actually win over time. So in our field, I think we wanted to create value by connecting things together, which led then to this perspective that we needed to be the platform enabling customers and adding capabilities over time.
Mm-hmm. So does this mean that the folks you have working and servicing your clients have to be more hands-on and there's more kind of human interaction happening between your teams and your clients' teams?
I think we've got this human interaction because we enable users, and our goal is actually to enable as many users among our customers, which indeed evolve, helping them train on our platform, but train also on ML, AI, and data in general. And so over time, we added those capacities of digital learning and training journeys in order to actually help them during that journey. But indeed, I think that you need some human contact in order to make some of that happen. But let's say human contact is a lot in our environment of data and analytics within actually digital interaction, as in online communities and other ways to actually get real answer for real people, but usually not so much face-to-face.
You know, I'd like to go back to something you said about when, you know, investors were telling you that you should focus on one thing, but you thought more deeply about it and said, no, I don't think that's the right way to go. And on a meta level, like thinking about being focused and maybe more fixated versus flexible, the ability for you to be flexible, I think, in that moment and in your decision process enabled you to evolve to where you are today. And you sit at a, you know, I'd say a more dominant position in the AI field. Is that an ability that you always had? You didn't always, you know, just subscribe to what someone was telling you or, you know, what maybe people in the industry were advising. You kind of thought independently of that.
If I want to think about it at the meta level, I would say that it's a good chunk of our reasoning was based on hands-on experience, as in having seen and experienced how you can build or build not a data platform, a data science platform, from the perspective of end customers. And I think that if you take the perspective of a technology firm, sometimes you feel like technology can solve everything because software engineers can do everything. And so you end up with a very technology-driven way to think about components and software categories and so forth, because you had this internal product from digital firm A, B, and C that was built internally, and so that could be potentially useful somewhere else. And so you've got a bunch of startups following this pattern. And I think that it does apply and can lead to some success. But I think that lots of things that are required by the enterprise, and especially if you take this perspective and you work into it, are actually way more boring from a technology perspective. It's all about how you can make things user-friendly. It's all about how you can make things enterprise-ready and secure and flexible over time and integrated and so forth, which is, for many engineers, very, very boring. I know that being an engineer myself. So you have to kind of like build into you this culture of like, we are ready to do the boring stuff and value that.
You know, I might be making an incorrect comparison, but I heard this, you know, we have a very, and you're probably familiar with this company. There's a company in the US called Costco, which everyone shops at. And it's generated a very loyal following and customers love Costco and they go year after year and they subscribe. What I've heard is that although it looks simplistic from the customer's perspective, it's a lot more complicated to run. There's a lot of things that the company orchestrates and has been very strategic and thoughtful about in terms of their business model and operations. When I hear about DataIQ being able to service its customers, regardless of what their needs may be in this data and AI field, I kind of get a similar sense. Am I off on that or are there some similarities?
No, I do like the comparison. Meaning, indeed, to some extent, if you follow too much a given technology route or insight or particular algorithms or all of those ideas, you end up building a Brooklyn specialty shop. Very popular, like great food, like for the best tea around and so forth. If you're very lucky, you can turn that into a global brand and make an online journey and so forth with your specialty coffee or tea from Brooklyn. Yeah, of course you can. But indeed, to serve people that want enough vegetables in a frozen way so that they can fill their fridge at the right price and so forth, you need Costco, indeed. And building Costco requires a lot of activities in terms of thinking about supply and prices and packaging and all of that stuff and the subscription model and loyalty and so on. And that's indeed a very different activity and business.
Switching gears a little bit, and we're coming up on time, but I want to ask a couple final questions. Before I hit that, can you tell us about the most challenging moment along your entrepreneurial journey?
I may not be very original there, but I think that as an entrepreneur that built the company quite a bit around offices, culture, and all of that, the first moment of COVID and the disconnect were, I think, very disturbing. And especially with the perspective of growing fast, hiring new people, and so forth. So this particular shift, I think, was very, very specific and still a strong memory for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, last two questions. One is, can you tell us about a person who has had a profound influence on you?
Oh, actually, that's odd, but I would say my kids. My kids, I realize more and more over time, gave me a good reason in terms of how to think about what I want to build. Because ultimately, if you build things for yourself, it's a bit selfish and you're not sure of why. But ultimately, if you think about the kids and like what should be life for them and so forth, it gives you a forward-looking perspective on things in general. So ultimately, my kids had a very strong influence on me.
Excellent. Yeah. Last question. Can you tell us about a charity, cause, or other endeavor that you're passionate about?
Well, so most of them relate actually back to kids, to the topic of education, because it might be my background, but I usually get to the perspective that most of the issue we have, unfortunately, won't be solved that easily. Would that be climate change or social inequity and so forth? But that ultimately, if you think from a 20 or 30 years perspective, giving the access to education and faster and broader access to education to folks is the best way to actually solve for them for the long term. And so I think about this broad access to education, everything that could enable people to learn faster and quicker and in a broader way, especially when they're young, from 0 to 10. I think that's the best investment we can make in the future in general.
Great. That's a great answer. Florian, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Thanks a lot.